Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome to our final segment already here on Circles of Change. It's always a pleasure to have an in-studio guest that's local. I welcome Lisa Bowden. How are you this morning, Lisa?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
It's my pleasure. Let me introduce Lisa. She's a publisher and co-founder of Corre Press, which was established 20 years ago to help women get published and also educate girls. Lisa is dedicated to progressive social change through a standing by women's words. She is also the editor of Autumnal, a collection of contemporary elegies. She's co-editor of Powder, Writing for Women in Ranks from Vietnam to Iraq, and co-adapter and director of Coming in Hot, which is actually a play based on the book Powder. Lisa's poetry can be found in various online journals. She's a 2011 recipient of the Marianne Campau Fellowship for Poetry from the University of Arizona Poetry Center and recognized as a Woman on the Move Award by the Tucson YWCA. A poet who works with an ensemble of dancers, writers, and a musician, Lisa's a graduate of the U of A. She's lived in London and Barcelona and resides in Tucson with her partner Eve and daughter Juna. So welcome again to the show.
Thank you so much.
What a repertoire. And on top of that, poetry. Was that something that was always a deep part of your life since you were young?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I experienced the world as a poet. And now that I am a practicing poet, I can say that it started at a young age, just noticing and observing and wondering a lot about the world. So, it's been in writing for sure. It's been inside me
for
a long time.
So what does that mean, experience life as a poet? That you see things more in crystal snippets or metaphors or?
All of the above. And yeah. I guess it depends on what poet you're talking to and the kind of writing they do. But keen observation, I think as any artist, you're noticing the world and you're observing and thinking about it and wanting to make something beautiful out of it somehow.
That's right. In fact, I would suspect that a lot of people, if we remember from our youthful days in our English class when the poetry unit came up, I think students either got it or you didn't, you know? And so yeah. You almost wanted to run for the hills. But boy, when you started opening the doors and it started making sense, it was a whole nother view and, like you call it, of the arts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think poetry gets a bad rap. I think people are afraid of poetry.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that sort of trickles down to how we experience poetry or learn poetry as children. Because if the teachers are afraid of it or they're trying to figure out what it means and that as if there's a right answer to a line of poetry, it's more about appreciation and remaining open to an experience.
You said something, though. That's really the trick with poetry. It's just like people who view fine art.
That's right.
And they're afraid of commenting because they're not sure what anyone else would see. Mm-hmm. And by the way, what is right or what is wrong?
Right.
And yet if you talk to the artist, truly, they'll say, actually, my work is only 50% done when I'm putting that paintbrush down or putting it in the frame. The other 50% is the beholder in the same way from the interpretation of the poetry.
Yeah.
Well, now, being a poet, though, I must suggest, though, I'm certain there are times that someone has given you an interpretation of something you wrote and you say, whoa, where did that come from? I would have never dawned on me.
A little bit, which is an exciting moment, actually, right? Because you write based on the environment and the moment and your thoughts and then the words that you are working with and form some sort of construction. And then it is a terrific moment when somebody tells you what they got out of that or what they saw in it or heard in it. And it's terrific when it's, you know, very different from what you intended.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's one thing to be a poet yourself and also to write and also to edit other individuals' work, but to launch off then into this world of becoming a publisher.
Mm.
So 20 years ago, was it you're wanting to have an avenue for your own work, or how did it come about you're establishing Corre Press?
Well, I'm one of two co-founders. The other one is Karen Falkenstrom, and I had been working with another publisher for the 5 years prior to opening Corre, and I had done that when I was, I had an internship when I was at the U of A with Chax Press and learned it was all studio publishing. So we made books by hand. We typeset. I mixed my own inks. I learned about color and design bindings and also about producing literary works in the community and kind of nonprofit work a little bit. And I just got to the point where I thought I'm ready to do my own thing. And out of a series of conversations, Core Press was born, you know, really seeing what a strong female literary presence there is in Tucson. And there still is.
Yes.
And coming out of, at that time, coming out of the English department and asking myself, look how rich this literary community is locally. Look at all what these women writers are doing. How come they're not in the canon? How come I didn't hear about them within the academy? And so I really thought about women's voices in a much broader sense and thought, this is what I want to focus my work on.
That's wonderful. Now, Corey Press is a not-for-profit, so that's a different journey entirely than someone who sends up a for-profit publishing house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine. I have been in the nonprofit world for 25 years, and yeah, we write grants, we do fundraising events, we sell our books, we review manuscripts and get run different contests, and so we have readers' fees, so we have both private contributions and foundation government grants and earned income through book sales. So it's a business. We are a business like any nonprofit organization has to be. We just happen to be a publisher that is focusing on literary merit and writing as art in the same way that symphony focuses on music as art and art museums and galleries and et cetera. Colonies focus on different kinds of art forms. So we are literary artists and literary activists.
I like that. Literary activists. And so talk to us about that. I mentioned in the introduction, progressive social change.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, coming into this project, really thinking that I wanted to make a contribution to writing the gender bias that I was exposed to, you know, and we see across the boards in mainstream media or positions
anything.
Of power, anything really, you know. And so that is, you know, the literary world and the publishing world is not immune from gender bias. And there are organizations in the country who in the last 5 years has made it their sole purpose to count who's getting published where, by whom, who's making those decisions, who sits on the boards of, you know, major newspapers and also in the literary publishing journal and book world. And our work is not done. So to me, the act of publishing is not only, publishing women is not only, you know, a feminist enterprise in that lifting up the voices of women and girls with our after-school writing a social activism workshop. It, you know, aesthetics and beauty are a part of that, not just the contents of the books, but because for the first 7 years we made all our books by hand in limited editions, that the art form was as important. And so the progressive social change has really been the lofty view of what we do is going to make a difference, that we believe women's voices can change the world. And so the more of them that we hear, the more parity that we can contribute to, the more change we will see. So that's the goal. A lot of our work is, you know, we do a lot of poetry. We do creative nonfiction, some short fiction as well. We also have, community programs that are a little more socially progressive based in terms of, you know, it's not, book publishing's a little passive. I mean, you have a writer that we publish her book and we help promote the work
sure,
and
absolutely.
Educate
yeah.
her about
open
that.
Open the doors, yeah.
And help open those doors. But we also want to pass the torch along to the younger generation who will be the next group of leaders. So we also do writing as activism programs for teenage girls And we've also done work with female veterans to capture their stories.
So tell us about what does that workshop look like for girls?
Well, it's been going on for over 10 years, and it can look a variety of different ways. You know, the overarching mission of it is to really sort of provoke and inspire girls by exposing them to, you know, what's going on in the news or hear what they have to say about what's important to them, what bothers them, what's relevant in their community, which may be high school, you know, for the most part. And then, you know, we have our mentors in that program are artists and writers. And so in a lot of ways, it is a mentoring kind of system, but a structure is developed where girls can kind of process their thinking around certain issues. And then the idea is to really develop a piece, either it's an individual piece or a group project that helps them situate their voice in a more of a public way. So helping them make that bridge from personal to the public and letting them know their voice matters with the expectation that there will be a presentation at the end, whether it's a retrofitted tampon machine that they dressed with a feather boa and wrapped the, you know, the feminine products with poems that they wrote and installed it in different public bathrooms around Tucson.
Fun, yeah.
Or it was a zine that they created, or they did a series of broadsides that were on display in different places, or they'd give public readings, or they would write op-ed pieces or do video op-ed pieces, some of which they've been doing a lot of short films lately. In the last several years, those have been screened at the Loft Cinema in Tucson, and so they get to reach a much larger public audience with that kind of medium.
So with 10 years under your in your repertoire here to follow then the careers of these young women that started with you.
Very exciting.
In that first year. Can you tell us a couple
Stanford
stories?
Stanford Law School.
Yep.
NYU. I mean, it's pretty impressive. And also knowing and hearing from girls that we actually have one alumni girl working with us now who just entered the U of A, and she said, well, the Girls Literary Activism Program made me a feminist, helped me realize that I was a feminist. And she started her own feminist club at University High. And so, you know, so we do stay in touch as much as we possibly can. And it's exciting.
I think the exciting part of it, too, is to catch young people, young men and young women, for them to see this intersection of so many of the different fields. So the intersection of the visual art, the written art, understanding the whole concept of bringing your ideas to the fore, the business element that you can blend into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the days of you making the books and smelling the ink and playing with the paper, maybe even making the paper, I would suspect, to now, you know, shipping them far afield or wherever you actually get printed them, technology, I'm sure, has been core to the ability to ramp up and scale up what you've been doing then.
Absolutely. I mean, it was an interesting crossroads for us to come to, and partly it was personal and partly it was organizational. It was that tension between making handmade objects that are limited by nature. For me, I always thought, well, I'm a printer, and so the power of the press lies with the presswoman, so I can have the power of production in my hands and create these books myself. Incredibly labor intensive, right? So, and also fairly toxic because the inks and solvents and so forth I created, I acquired an allergy to them. And so I could no longer produce work in the way that I really wanted to. But that tension of, you know, really making a change in the world involves reaching a larger, much larger number of people. And so we shifted to, you know, designing in-house and buying our printing, you know, from book manufacturers, and we have a distributor, national distributor, and it's a different animal, but it's been a different animal for quite some time, and it's actually very liberating. Yeah.
And then also the whole advent of ebooks is in the process too.
Right. And we haven't done it yet. Not out of interest. It's just been a capacity issue. I mean, I talked to my colleagues at other presses around the country, and it sounds like even poetry readers are reading poetry online and ebooks, and there is actually a whole new genre of writing that is created just to be viewed online or on a screen.
Exactly.
So it's a really exciting moment. I mean, the face of the publishing industry has changed over the past decade and is changing at a much faster rate. I mean, right, all the publishing companies have been eating each other up.
Absolutely.
And there's fewer of them.
Infinite consolidation. and the whole move towards self-publishing. But the other piece of it, I would say, which kind of is interesting to go back to Corre Press's mission, is this real social connectivity and sense of community and so on. I think that's what everyone is looking for in some way. So the idea of all doing it all my own, you know, there's still some inconsistency with that, because for those of you who are writers and artists, the power of the critique, the power of the support of others, you can get really broken from that.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, what we've been doing for years is kind of hip now.
It's not, you know. That's right.
In a way, community building and social justice and literary activism, and really bringing the arts and lots of different perspectives and genres together. We've always worked that way. I mean, I think as artists concerned with the community around us and wanting to do work that's relevant, we've always kind of worked that way.
Isn't that fun? We're speaking with Lisa Bowden, by the way, from Corre Press. She's one of the co-founders. You can learn more by going to korepress.org, or their office line is 520-327-2127 here in Tucson. So Lisa, tell us a little bit about your own writing and the career that has evolved or continues to take shape, because I'm sure you're not one that's just going to let it stagnate or go in just one direction.
You are very sweet. I 20 years into Corre Press, I am taking myself more seriously as a writer than I have been before. And I think, promoting other people's careers and reading, being sort of a professional reader, I put this professional work ahead of my own. Yeah. And the last several years, sort of coming out as an artist in my own right, has been a lot more interesting to me. So it's wonderful and scary and and terrific. And of course, it's always, what kind of time can I give to it? But I'm I just got a writing studio that I share with a fellow poet, and I just applied for a residency. And I send my I'm being encouraged to send my work out to contests and so forth. So it's interesting to be on the other side of that. And I just can't wait to write. I have lots of thoughts and doodles and notes. And
That takes a bold step, not just for the sake of you personally to return to some of the things that drove you into this field, but also for you and your partner and others involved in Corre Press to know that you might be taking a significantly different role now, a step aside.
Yeah, not quite
yet.
Step
over, not over. I understand that, but to always stay fresh and not succumb to what's properly known as founder syndrome.
Oh, yes.
Where
we've
you
been
can't
talking
get out
about
your own
that
way.
For years. Yes, exactly. We are, yeah. Well, the plans for Corre, and I'm not ready to step out of the way yet,
no.
But a role change at some point might be nice. We're growing the press. I mean, we decided a couple years ago, as we were approaching the 20-year mark, that, we really wanted to make some bold steps. And the environment, the national publishing environment, national writing environment, all the information that we're getting from 20 years of good relationships with writers and readers is that we're kind of a rare breed. And I think there's a lot of support for what we do. So we are positioning the press to grow nationally, growing the board of directors, increasing our budget, as doing feasibility around that, and developing programming for replication in other cities.
So
that's
the
goal. That's the dream.
Franchising the idea.
Yeah, in a way, yes. Yeah.
Well, I understand here a couple of years ago you were one of the few nonprofits that's been awarded a National Endowment for the Arts. I mean, just the journey to go do that. Were there not voices out there that said, you can't do that, or you're not big enough to do that? Or
well, there's always those voices. And just to clarify that, it's a National Endowment for the Arts Big Read
Project.
Initiative. Yeah, so it's a specific initiative within the NEA. We will hear next month if we got funding from the NEA for our general publishing. But yes, 2 years ago, I think we're still the only organization in Southern Arizona to have received that Big Read grant. And we just decided to pull out all the stops and do everything we wanted to do. So we had a 40-partner
wonderful
project over 10 weeks of city programming that went on in restaurants and bars and on the buses and in schools and libraries and the Club Congress. And it was tremendous. We had students at Tucson High translating Emily Dickinson poems into Spanish and performing them. We had slam poetry workshops using Emily's work. And so the idea behind the Big Read is to build community with the work of a poet or a writer. And the NEA provides you with a list of
And of course, for our listeners who aren't here in Tucson or even in the state of Arizona, to know that it's been in the last 4 or 5 years that the Tucson Festival of Books has come to fruition, which is totally heightened a greater community awareness about the necessity for investing in literacy. But talk about something that's pulled community, of course, associated with the University of Arizona, 150,000 people last year, and we keep capping it year after year after year.
Yeah, it's tremendous. They've done amazing work.
How many books, is there such a thing? How many books on average, or what would be a metric that would indicate the contribution you make annually in the literary world? How many authors or co-authors and so on?
6 to 8. We do 6 to 10 books a year. Yep. We'd like to get to a solid 10 or 12. To date, we have launched, actually with our most recent collection, 80 careers. We published 127 women writers, and helped hundreds of girls to bring their voice to the public.
Yes. Well, in particular, just the joy that you've got to watch that legacy factor unfurl.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, I wanted to say what's on the drafting board. That doesn't make sense. But
I like a drafting
board.
What's
the drafting board for your own writing right now? What piece have you got ruminating around?
Well, it's really setting up my studio. And I have a 21-month-old daughter, and so that has taken quite a bit of my time, but it's been terribly inspiring. So I have lots of writing to do.
So this whole idea, you're flipping it up in a number of ways, flipping for your organization as well as for you personally.
That's right. Thank you.
You know, with the young one, for sure, with our daughter now, who's a sophomore in high school and a son who's sophomores in college. It never stops from here. There's no looking back.
Okay. You just have to keep doing it.
That's exactly right. Well, I commend to our listeners' interest to Lisa Bowden. Her organization is Core Press, KorePress.org. The office is 327-2127. Any programs coming up that you're looking specifically for support for?
Absolutely. As you mentioned, we are turning 20 this year. We're having a big benefit auction and birthday celebration on November 10th. It takes place at the historic Franklin House on the lawns downtown. Tickets are $25 in advance, $30 at the door. We will have an art and services auction and food and drink and live music and a ribbon cutting ceremony at the beginning and lots of good times.
So. Great. Well, I'm glad we were able to sneak in at this point in time then to let our listeners know about it. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Well, what a show. Again, I hope my guests and I offered some targeted advice to help those of you in the midst of a career organizational change, and most certainly any leaders of such change agendas. And in particular, based on our segment here with Lisa, inspiring social change as well. I appreciate your spreading the good word about our show. In particular, do take advantage now of over 1,000 podcast segments we have out there at thelarsongroup.com. That's Larson with an E. And today's podcast will be posted by Tuesday, so that on Friday, the mobile site release will give those of you smartphone subscribers direct access to the link. So you can opt in, pick up your smartphone right now. The simple keyword of Dr. Zara, D-A-D-R-Z-A-R-A, to 313131. And if you do so today, beyond a shadow of a doubt, I know you're going to enjoy the ripple effect back to you. Just a quick operative word review. Diane Turner from Diane S. and Sam Turner for her book Heart Wisdom. For Kelly Pratt, her new book, OneStorchStaging.com, to learn about Stage to Sell, and look for Kelly at the upcoming Tucson Home Show. Candy Hirsch, if you're interested in Women's Presidents Organization or Vistage peer-to-peer leader connections, go to Vistage.com. And then, as we said today, Lisa Bowen, indeed, she's got an exciting event coming up on November 10th. Go to CoreyPress.org. In addition, then, to our talented guests and broadcast partners, it's thanks to the professional team here at Journal Broadcasting, in particular Chuck and Jim and Ross, who keep me going, plus those who help shoulder the cost of our efforts for advertising, Loft Lopez and Associates, Rain Chaser Landscaping, Abbott Taylor Jewelers, the Acupuncture and Allergy Clinic, Night Horses Fine Art and Publishing, the Arizona Center for Reproductive Endocrinology and Infertility, and Grace St. Paul's Church Community. Indeed, there's only just a few days left to reserve your seat for next Wednesday's October 16th kickoff luncheon for Energize Your Enterprise. It's a partnership between Beach Fleischman, public accountant, and the University of Arizona, targeted at business leaders and entrepreneurs on how to grow your business further. Go to energizeyourenterprise.org. It'll be lunch at the Westin La Paloma from 11 to 1:30. The Larson Group and this radio show are my commitment to help others take full credit, indeed, for the experience circles you've enjoyed throughout your life and launch, though, confidently towards what's next, whether that be to make more of exactly where you are or actually to shift. I help individuals of all ages and stages of careers first get anchored, though, in a clear picture of a future that plays to your passions and gifted abilities. We'll back you up with a contemporary resume, bio, reference list, and a critical interviewing headset. For those of you on the organizational side, my forte, I'll put my hand right behind your shoulder blade so you can't back up as you move and change in a new direction and grow your firm as well as your team. Call me toll-free, 877-544-2580, for a 30-minute free consultation of where you think you are or you aren't. I'd be delighted to step in and add you to my territory of positive change. Again, toll-free, 877-544-2580. This has been Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, and remember that you can get anything you want in your life so long as you're first in service to help others get what it is they want. And people you know often don't care what you know until they first know how much you care. Thanks for tuning in here on 104.1, The Right Talk for Tucson. Have a great weekend, and remember to grasp onto that new circle of change, because lest anyone tell you otherwise, it is your turn, so take it. All right. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.